The John Steigerwall Show, AM 1250, The Answer.
Chicago used to be my favorite city to go to, even more so for my wife, and we used to go there at least once a year. New York was her favorite until she discovered Chicago, actually. But we stopped going there, mostly because we can't stand dealing with airports. I don't fly anywhere anymore. But Chicago is being destroyed, like so many other cities, by Democrats. How bad is it now? Well, Matt Rodriguez knows. He grew up there, and he's written Rosenberg, I'm sorry. Sorry about that, Matt. He grew up there, and he's written a book called What Next, Chicago? Notes of a Pissed Off Native Son, and he joins us now. Not a good start, Matt. I got your name wrong, but I'll try better next time. Thanks for coming on.
Hey, that's all right. I'll be an honorary Latino. Not a problem.
All right, as long as you're not offended by that. Very good. Thanks. Hey, listen, before we get to what next, what about now? I mean, how bad is it there in Chicago?
It's not good. There's still lots of greatness wrapped into the DNA of this city. I want to be clear about it. There's a lot to still attract you if you know the place and love the place, but it's really bad. The violent crime is spiraling out of control. Areas that used to be safe aren't anymore, including downtown. Really horrific, rotten stuff is happening on the sidewalks and in the nightclubs and other venues of the city. The schools continue to dramatically fail Black and Latino students. In particular, the county court system is a complete mess. Bail reform has been badly misapplied. Then we've got runaway public employee pension debt. And finally, the politics is really skewed. It's very racialized. We're in the grip of what I call racial essentialism. And that makes it very hard to be honest about the challenges that lie in front of particularly the Black community of Chicago. So it's not a good present day situation here in Chicago at all.
You know, I used to parachute in for a couple of days, you know, a long weekend and then leave. You grew up there. And then you decided to go back last summer, a year ago. Did you go back with the intention of writing a book, or did what you found there make you decide, I got to write a book about this?
I came back with the intention of doing field work for a book. I had lived here 30 years from 64 to 94, really a crucial period in my life, from the age of 6 to about 35. And I've lived in Seattle the last, 20 plus years with my beautiful wife. We raised our kids there, but I've always come back. This place has always been home. And then last year, John, looking at the violent chaos unfolding all around the country, for sure, but especially in my old hometown, I just kind of, you know, it was a palm to the forehead time. And I felt that the news stories were helpful, but weren't digging deep enough. So I moved back in, went down to the South Side where I grew up, but went down deeper, further, to talk to Black people, to hear their life stories, to find success stories, which I did, and which are important, and also to hear what's gone wrong and how to fix it all.
Yeah, and I mean, when I would go, I would stay downtown, and my wife loved walking on Michigan Avenue. We'd take a walk on the lake in the morning, and then, you know, just kind of hang around a little bit. I never spent a long period of time there, but you having lived there. So how drastic are we talking about here? Would most people who did what you did, left Chicago and came back, would they notice the same things you saw?
I think they would. I mean, you see more, frankly, if you go beyond the usual comfortable, you know, tourist spots. You see more if you go down and sit down with people at their kitchen tables and drink sweet tea with them. If you go into workplaces in the, you know, sort of the nether parts of town and you walk the streets, especially of the ghost neighborhood. So if you're just downtown, though, you would notice differences now. More stores are empty. There are marauding professional armed robbery rings that sweep into high-end stores and steal tens of thousands of dollars worth of handbags or empty out beauty supply stores. You might see armed robbery crews jumping out of carjacked SUVs onto downtown sidewalks and relieving dozens of people of their phones and wallets in short order. It's really turned into a 24-hour unreality show here. It's bizarre and scary, but I think there is some hope. I found some hope, and it resides in one household at a time, and there are tremendous and important success stories that I found on the South Side. Pastors in Black neighborhoods running job training programs for Black female electricians who are getting certified, other construction industry training programs, successful charter schools, a state tax credit for private school tuition that a lot of minority families are taking advantage of, and then other household-by-household success stories of people who've turned their lives around big time, like ex-convicts who are now on the up-and-up, working entrepreneurs, two-parent families, raising their kids right, Christian homeschoolers. So it's not just a one-note samba here. You know, there's stuff between the cracks. We need to support these folks who are doing it right, who are living with what I call moral authority. And more, John, it hits me that, you know, policy matters, and I outline a ton of policy prescriptions in my book, but it also comes down to sort of this land beyond policy, where we just have to make a difference as, you know, parents, children, brothers, sisters, aunts and uncles, and grandparents. And so that's part of the hope that still lives here. But it's tough. There's no putting a varnish on it.
Yeah, you didn't mention government as a solution there. If Lori Light, I mean, this is what you described there is pretty horrific. If Lori Lightfoot, who's the mayor now, if election day were tomorrow and she was running, she'd win in a landslide, wouldn't she, despite what you just described? I'm not the good stories, but the nightmare stuff.
Yeah, I'm not sure she would. There is a mounting criticism, and I do want to be clear, and I don't stint at all on the analysis and criticism in the book. I think it's crucial to talk about governance and our, you know, urban political elite, which is increasingly of color in Chicago and other cities. The big idea was always, you know, we can't let these guys off the hook. I don't want to have to move to a land beyond politics, which I just spoke of. But increasingly, it seems that the leadership class is incompetent, distracted, and downright harmful. And here, they've literally run everything into the ground, from the, you know, the pension debt to the malfunctioning schools to the court system that's determined to put dangerous criminals back out on the street as soon as possible so they can just do it all over again. It's turning out very badly, but the tide is shifting. I think people are starting to catch on. So I don't know if Lightfoot would be reelected, and she's going to have some challengers. It'll be interesting to see how that plays out. And I say, let's not forget Eric Adams. You know, the guy may not be perfect by conservative standards. Myself, I'm a cantankerous independent, though, and I'm glad to see a centrist Democrat likely to be the next mayor of New York. Here's a guy who supports police, supports school choice, and let's keep an eye on that, I say.
Yeah. Well, the good things that you mentioned, the positive stories, are happening, I'm guessing, in spite of government, not because of anything any of the political so-called leaders are doing.
That's exactly right, and this is timeless stuff. And, you know, toward the end of the book, and I give full credit to the people that I interviewed, I round up what I call the South Side rules. And one of them is, you know, black-on-black violence is cancer. Let's not put a fence around discussing the topic. That's one of the things I heard from Black people on the South Side. There's a whole bunch of other South Side rules, and they're basically smart things your grandma told you, you know? The point is that the conversation has become so alienated, you know, because everyone is afraid of being called a racist. Nobody can actually talk about anything anymore. And it really harms and retards policy innovation in our big cities. And I think what we have here is kind of a failure to innovate. You know, we see examples that are positive, like a micro lending program down in one southeast side neighborhood in Chicago, where ex-convicts are starting delivery companies, you know, for $20,000 a pop, they take out a small loan from the Chicago Neighborhoods Initiative's micro-lending program and buy a delivery van. And there are Amazon distribution centers, you know, sprouting up everywhere around greater Chicago and most of our other metro regions. Well, that's a great job for an ex-convict. So that's happening. But, you know, in 10 years, drones will maybe be making the last mile's delivery. So that goes to continuing education, right? Learn how to operate a drone panel. Who knows what the future will hold? So here you have guys literally blowing each other's brains out over, you know, disrespectful rap videos. Honest to goodness, social media is actually partly at the root of some of this crazy gang violence that we have. And, you know, I think that you have to be insecure about your future if you're going to get bogged down in that stuff. So we really got to concentrate on public education, on taking that pilot program for a state income tax credit for private donors to a scholarship fund so that minority kids can go to Catholic and other private schools. It's a great program called Invest in Illinois, but our billionaire Democrat governor has twice tried to kneecap it. Twice he has failed because Democratic legislators respond when kids and parents of color go down to the state capitol to lobby for preservation of the program. So we need to make Invest in Kids a permanent, not a pilot. And we really need to go at some of the policy solutions here. But you got to fall back on the household and the family, too, because you just can't count on these guys.
We're talking to Matt Rosenberg. His book is What Next, Chicago? Notes of a Pissed Off Native Son. And I'm just wondering, I've wondered about this a long time ago, not that long ago. I read a book called Super Mob. I don't know if you're familiar with it.
Sounds cool.
The guy's last name is Russo. You should check it out as a Chicago native. It's an unbelievable book about the mob. And one of the names that jumps out at me, and it jumps out at me every time I see a mention, you just mentioned the governor. Is he not the son or the grandson of a gangster who was buddies with Al Capone, and he's involved in the Hyatt hotel chain, right?
Yeah, I can't speak to the first part of your question, but J.B. Pritzker is part of that family that has made its fortune in the hotel business.
Well,
yeah.
Then he's the same family, and this guy Pritzker was a big time gangster, and I don't understand why I don't see more about it. Unless the guy's name is Gus Russo, who wrote the book. He also wrote a book called The Outfit. I'm sure you're familiar with who The Outfit was. but it was a great book about that, Curly Humphrey and all those guys. But the point the point I'm getting to here is that Chicago is kind of the poster city for corruption.
Yeah,
and I'm talking about political corruption and corruption in political office. And I'm pretty sure that the governor of the state is the grandson of a major league gangster. So how's that ever going to change?
Well, yeah, it's more than that. It's in City Hall. And I think the way it changes starts with a few things that I actually outline in my book. Some of it is the fine print that sounds like eye glazed stuff, but it matters. We need to do better than a 33% turnout in our local elections. And on purpose, the politicians schedule the local elections for odd numbered years in early months of the year. They also are taking control of the city council redistricting process, you know, in the way that political bosses do. And they're continuing to carve up the districts by race, which, if it worked, would have worked already, because we've been doing that for quite a while now. We need to have an independent commission draw the ward lines. We've got way more districts in our city council than we need. We've got 50 of them. And the more fingers that are in the pie, the worse it gets. Then on top of that, we've got three current city council members under federal indictment. And it's the same old stuff that's been going on for years. One thing I propose is reforming public contracting, having an independent outside panel, literally out-of-town experts, decide who gets the contracts. Contracting here has been a very sticky-fingered affair with kickbacks going on, you know, just eternally. So it's a very corrupt place, and that gives rise to rigged rules of governance, like the oddly scheduled elections and no-term limits and a bunch of other things. So the tail is wagging the dog here.
Yeah, that happens a lot. And here in Pittsburgh, we don't have the issues, I think, to the degree that they have them in Chicago. But, you know, there hasn't been a Republican mayor here since it's been like 90 years. And so that's never going to change either. Yeah, I got a couple minutes left here with Matt Rosenberg. The book is What Next, Chicago? Notes of a Pissed Off Native Son. Why do people stay there, Matt? I mean, or are people starting to say, you know what, I can do better than this? And so I'm talking about the city of Chicago.
Yeah, a lot of people are leaving, but still there's 2.7 million people here. And people stay here for a variety of reasons. And I can give you some idea of that. I feel it myself when I come back here. As long as no one is going upside your head, there's a lot to recommend this place. When I came back once again in mid-September of this year, just as my book was about to come out, you know, there I was one September night downtown looking at a beautiful skyline, one of 3,000 or 4,000 people in a beautiful downtown park called Millennium Park, watching a live blues concert. You know, there I was the weekend after that down in Hyde Park, where I grew up by the University of Chicago, looking at the Gothic cathedral-like buildings, listening to a world-class jazz festival, connecting with friends, eating great food, enjoying the outdoors. So, you know, the architecture, the culture, the music, the literature, the brain power of the universities, the University of Chicago, Northwestern, Loyola, DePaul, the financial acumen of this place, not in the public sector, granted, but the people. You know, 95% of them are awesome and great. We've got a tyranny of the minority here. It's making it hard to be safe on the streets, but the people are open-hearted, warm, smart, high-achieving. So, you know, everything that's great potentially about a big American city lives here in Chicago. So that's all the more reason I say, John, we can't just wash our hands.
No.
Of these places. They're too important to our nation. They're the heart and soul of our country, in a way.
It's a beautiful city, and you don't want to see, you don't want to let people ruin it. It isn't any more complicated mm-hmm. than that to me. Hey, I'm out of time, Matt, good luck with the book. What Next, Chicago? Notes of a Pissed Off Native Son.
And, John, if I could just mention, folks, yeah. got to get it online. So go to Amazon or BarnesandNoble.com and just search for What Next, Chicago.
Very good. Thanks, Matt. We'll be right back.